Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzol.
There we go. I come to you from North Canton, Ohio, where I'm recording on land belonging to the Kaskaskia peoples.
And I come to you from Detroit, Michigan, where I'm recording on land belonging to the Ojibwe, Ottawa, Potawatomi, and Wyandot nations.
Amazing. These are some of many nations that are still very much out here doing their thing. We would like to acknowledge that.
Fuck yeah.
This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. We be drinking.
Prepare to get scandalized.
Yes. It's going to, the scandal's going to be on 10 for this one, I have a feeling. We be drinking and we be swearing. And we be doing gay shit because tis the season. Gay shit.
Butt stuff.
Yes. We be pegging in these streets. We be doing all sorts of things, or at least I'm doing all sorts of things. I'm doing butt stuff in my mind.
Yes. Yes. Oh dear.
Don't know, dear me.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. So today we are drinking an old-timey cocktail called a brandy cobbler. My story today spans a period of well over 100 years. So I had a really hard time choosing what era I wanted to like focus on when choosing a cocktail. There were sort of two separate eras that I could have gone with. But ultimately, I decided to choose something from the sort of beginning years of the story. And since it's Pride Month, since it's June, I decided I wanted to go for something a little fruity, a little over the top, something gay.
I love it.
Yes, this cocktail is doing butt stuff right now. So I chose the Brandy Cobbler. If you have been around from the very beginning, or if you've gone back and listened to the older episodes, you might remember that the very first cocktail we ever had on this show was a sherry cobbler. Cobblers became really popular towards the end of like the 1830s in the United States. This was right around the same time that the ice trade in the United States was expanding, making it much easier to create cocktails that called for tons of ice. And much like juleps, cobblers call for crushed ice and plenty of it. In fact, no one is really certain where the name cobbler comes from, but according to David Wondrich, it may have something to do with the cobbles of ice that are in this drink.
Cool.
Yes.
I love that.
Originally, the first cobbler recipes were always made with wine or fortified wine. The sherry cobbler was definitely the most popular variety. But in Jerry Thomas's 1862 Bartender's Guide, he also includes recipes for a Catawba wine cobbler, a claret cobbler, a hock cobbler. Hock is sort of a British term for a German white wine, like a Riesling, and a Sauternes cobbler. But oddly enough, Jerry Thomas's book also includes a whiskey cobbler recipe, which actually calls for a whopping 4 ounces of whiskey on ice.
That's like a julep, right?
It's basically, the juleps and cobblers are really, really similar. They're almost identical. The main difference is cobblers have fruit in them and juleps tend to have mint.
Okay.
You can also put fruit in a julep, but this, like, it's like sort of sliced up citrus is like the main thing that you want in a cobbler. We decided to scale down to 3 ounces.
Yes.
And we are drinking a brandy cobbler today, not a whiskey cobbler. According to David Wondrich, brandy cobblers were super popular, especially in New York City in like the 1850s.
Is that where your scandal is from, New York?
Sort of mid-1800s. It starts a little bit before that, but it goes through there. It goes sort of like the first chunk starts in like the 1840s and spans like 1870s, something like that. So there's not really much to this drink. It's super easy to get to put together. The main thing that you need is to have crushed ice. Luckily, now I have a refrigerator that makes crushed ice for me, so I don't have to do it by hand anymore. But Jerry Thomas does insist that special attention needs to be paid to how it is presented. Quote, "The cobbler does not require much skill in compounding, but to make it acceptable to the eye as well as to the palate, it is necessary to display some taste in ornamenting the glass after the beverage is made."
Wow. That is very gay.
Yes, it is.
That's like the gayest cocktail description I've ever heard.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. He's like, just pour some booze in a glass, but then make it gay.
Make it fashion.
Dress that shit up. Yes, exactly. Make it fashion. It's fashion. Yes. It is the moment.
Yes. Your picture of this cocktail is the moment. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's showing out.
Yeah. Check the Instagram if you haven't already. Thomas even includes an illustration of what a cobbler should look like in his bartender's manual.
Okay.
So basically you want to fill a glass all the way to the top, to the point of overflowing with crushed ice. And then you just build the cocktail over that. Basically it's just like booze, a little bit of simple syrup,
yeah,
maybe a splash of soda water, and then a bunch of fruit. That's it.
Simple. I love it.
You don't even put like fruit juice in. You just sort of slice the fruit and throw it in and call it a day. Oh, and you always serve it with a straw because it would be really difficult to drink otherwise.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a little taste here.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers to a gay cocktail, to an icon, mm-hmm. The Brandy Cobbler.
So tasty.
Yeah.
It's so simple, but like literally just booze and simple syrup and like frozen. It has to be super, super cold because you barely even taste any booze.
Yeah. It's the magic of like that ice, like the snow cone effect.
Yeah. It's basically a prescription julep, but with orange slices instead of mint. All right. So I guess it's time to dive into my story here. If you haven't caught on by now, it is June and this is Pride Month and we're doing gay shit today.
We are.
So I'm sure most of our listeners are by now at least vaguely aware of all the bills popping up across this country that are targeting the freedoms of LGBTQ Americans, especially drag performers and trans people.
Yes.
Are being targeted like the most right now. These bills go well beyond Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay bill, which that is horrible on its own, but like these bills are even worse. They literally criminalize public expressions of gender that don't align with the gender that people were assigned at birth. Some people want to think that these bills aren't really a big deal, that they only prevent drag queens from performing in front of children, which is patently untrue. That's how they're being presented by the politicians pushing them, but it is not what the bills actually
it's
say
such a
and not
fake
how they're going
argument
to be enforced.
Too. I try not to even engage because it's like it's so false.
What harm, like how many children have been murdered by drag queens?
Thank you.
Recently?
How many drag queens have come into a school and shot them up during their math class?
This is like, these bills do not do that. That is patently untrue. But even if it were true, it would still be really fucked up. Parents should be allowed to decide whether or not they want their kids to attend a drag show. And older kids should be able to decide that for themselves. And parents should be allowed to decide like which drag shows they deem appropriate if they want to take their kids to a drag show. But, you know, these small government right-wing people are saying that they should be able to be the ones to decide whether or not parents should allow their kids to watch drag performances. And the bottom line is not all drag performances are inappropriate for children. That's basically what they're saying here, is that drag is inappropriate for kids. Mm-hmm. Some drag performances are inappropriate for kids. Lots of drag is very sexual and sexualized, which, you know, who cares? These kinds of performances are being done in bars that are adults only spaces.
Yeah.
And kids shouldn't be there anyway. So there's no reason that drag performers at bars for adults should have to be kid friendly because there shouldn't be kids there in the first place.
I mean, these kids are on YouTube, like YouTube watching like Nicki Minaj videos, like watching.
Straight people get to be super hypersexualized all the time, all day, every day. And nobody gives half a
shit.
And
like kids' shows too. Like
the bottom line is, even though some drag is inappropriate for kids, but that doesn't mean it all is. There are plenty of drag queens who really like to perform for kids and do the drag queen story hours, and they're not showing up with their boobs out. Yeah. They're, you know what I mean? They know how to, we're adults. We know how to like code switch essentially for children. You know what I mean? Like to go and say that because some drag performances are sexually explicit or whatever, that no kids should ever be able to watch a drag show is basically like saying some movies are rated R, so no kids should ever be able to watch a movie ever again. But I'm getting away from myself here. This is not my point. The point is that these laws may be presented by these lawmakers as intended to keep innocent children away from sexually explicit drag shows. Mm-hmm. But the reality is the way these laws are being written almost like has nothing to do with drag.
Imagine.
These laws are far more likely to be weaponized against trans people and people with non-traditional forms of gender expression to criminalize their existence and abolish them from public view, which means people will be arrested and given criminal records simply for wearing the clothing that they feel most comfortable in. Of course, not surprisingly, enforcement of these laws is much more likely to be targeted towards poor people and people of color. But yeah, I need to get out of the current day and dive into history. I've been ranting around my actual topic for today for long enough.
I plan to do the same, just so you know.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard with it, you know, when we're talking about pride and everything that's going on in the world today. It's hard not to try and bring it back. Exactly. Ugh. Exactly. The reality is that while these laws are currently spreading like wildfire right now, this is nothing new. Americans have been using the police to enforce traditional ideas about gender and gender expression for hundreds of years. So today, I want to talk about masquerade laws.
Ooh.
Yeah. Have you heard of masquerade laws?
I don't think so,
It sounds a lot more fun than it actually is.
Oh, damn.
When I was a kid at school, learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
These laws were originally designed to prevent people from dressing in disguise with the intention of avoiding identification while committing crimes. So the law is basically like, you're not allowed to run around wearing like a mask or covering your face so that people can't recognize you because you're going to then like do something bad. But then the police later repurposed these laws specifically to criminalize the existence of queer and trans people in public spaces.
Okay. Yeah, of course they do.
So, yes. Yeah. So before I get into all that, let's get toasty.
Yes.
It's time for a little toast. Raise a glass to putting the disobedience back in civil disobedience.
I love it.
We need to make the enforcement of these cruel and unjust laws as difficult as possible. Get out there and fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Don't let this happen.
Do crime. Wear costumes.
Yeah, seriously. Be gay, do crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, wear costumes. But if you can't protest these laws in person, please at least consider donating to the ACLU's Drag Defense Fund.
Yeah.
We'll put a link in the show notes. It's very important. And it does not just protect drag queens. It is also, this money is, you know, basically supporting the entire LGBTQIA community, but especially trans people right now. Okay. I think I'm ready. I'm going to take another sip.
Yeah, same.
This drink, there's a lot of booze in this and it's going down very smoothly. All right. People like to act like the visibility and the mainstream acceptance of drag and different forms of gender expression are something new and terrifying in the world today. They want to act like we need to go back to traditional values.
Yes.
We need to protect the children.
Oh my God.
Avert their eyes. Yes.
Oh my God.
But
the children, think about them.
It's the children.
Think about them and their big heads and high pitched voices.
Just I mean, don't think about them when guns are involved, but think about them when anything else is. Yeah.
Oh.
But conservatives have been crying about people basically living their lives differently than they do for hundreds of years. This is not anything new. Similar to today, laws criminalizing cross-dressing were spreading like wildfire across the United States in the mid-1800s. Rather than being pushed by state lawmakers like today, though, these laws were being passed at a city level.
Okay.
And they were usually part of a broader campaign against vice that also tended to target indecency, public drunkenness, disorderly conduct, sex workers, and the unhoused. The first of these laws was passed in St. Louis, Missouri in 1843, followed by Columbus, Ohio in 1848,
Boo.
And Nashville, Tennessee in 1850. Yes. Fuck all the way off. Ugh. So if you remember my minisode, I believe it was episode or minisode 38 on the roots of policing in this country that I did last year, you might recognize this timing as basically lining up almost exactly with the same years that publicly funded municipal police forces were expanding their reach throughout cities in this country. So basically what was happening here was, what happened was,
there we go.
If your city was going to start paying for this shiny new police force, you had to criminalize more stuff.
Yeah, you had to give
them
more
so that they had something to do.
Totally.
Exactly.
Ugh.
We had to try to, at least try to create the illusion that these police officers weren't hired specifically and solely to terrorize poor people and people of color. Now, when I recorded that mini-sode, I didn't really realize that we should also have added queer people to that list, but we should have.
We're adding them now.
Yes, exactly. I didn't really realize how visible they were then in like the mid-1800s, that they were visible enough that people were freaking out and like passing drag bans across the country.
Yeah. They're not new. They like to pretend that they're new. And this is part of the reason why they don't want to teach queer history, queer theory.
Exactly.
Because people realize that this is just a part of the human spectrum of sexuality.
So more than 40 American cities passed similar laws criminalizing cross-dressing by the end of the 19th century. And that number continued to climb through the 1920s. While laws specifically targeting cross-dressing were only being passed at the city level, several states did, however, pass anti-disguise laws, also known as masquerade laws, that never specifically mentioned gendered clothing in the way they were written, but were absolutely targeted at cross-dressing in the way that they were enforced. One of the oldest masquerade laws was passed in New York State in 1845. It was originally intended to punish rural farmers who were dressing up as Native Americans and women to attack tax collectors. Yes.
That's trash. Kind of like,
I mean, like, it's very similar to like the Whiskey Rebellion story, what was going on there. But New York was like, okay, people aren't allowed to wear costumes now in public because they're gonna attack tax collectors. Yeah, so New York's law made it a crime to appear in public with a painted face or a disguise intended to prevent identification while committing a crime. In 1874, California passed a similar masquerade law in response to gambling dealers in saloons who were wearing disguises so undercover cops wouldn't be able to identify
them. Okay, that's real. That's a real crime. You know, you're trying to get over at blackjack.
I mean, what these people were doing in New York was also a real crime. I mean, they were literally attacking tax collectors, but also like, you can't just say nobody can wear a fucking costume at any time in public.
Yeah, so strange.
But they did. And I bet you'd be shocked to learn that it didn't take long for these laws to be used to criminalize cross-dressing and gender inappropriateness.
Oh my God, they said that? Gender inappropriateness? Yeah.
That was a quote that I found in my research. I'm not sure if that was a quote from the time or if that's what this historian was calling it today, but either way.
Yeah.
So during the 19th century, the vague language and flexible interpretation of these city anti-cross-dressing laws and state masquerade laws made it really, really easy for the police to pretty much go after whoever they felt like going after. The idea was like, you can't wear a costume in public because you might commit a crime if you did.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Okay. So that's trash.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all trash, but this like, just because you're wearing a costume, we think you're shady and you're up to something.
Exactly.
Like, no, yeah. Girl, I'm just having fun.
I'm going to have to make another one of these cocktails at the break. Same. I'm going through it very quickly. There's so much booze in it. So thousands of people were arrested under these laws. And while the majority were queer or gender nonconforming people, these arrests also included feminists who were protesting the restrictive clothing of that era.
Were they wearing pants?
Yes.
Oh, bitch.
You can't have that. Yeah. They also included women who were dressing up as men to be able to go out and find work.
Okay.
Because, you know, most labor at that time was male dominated. And some women were just dressing up in men's clothing so that they could travel more easily without like being harassed or even just like go about their day with a greater freedom of movement than women experienced in society.
This is how they got around catcalling. They're like, I'm just going to
I'm just going to dress up like a man. Yeah. And the fact that these masquerade laws were never intended to be enforced this way really didn't fucking matter to anyone by the time they were. In Brooklyn in 1913, for example, a person who we would today call a transgender man was arrested for masquerading in men's clothes and smoking and drinking in a bar.
Smoking and drinking is illegal, though?
Well, if you're a woman, these are male-only spaces.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah. When the magistrate pointed out that the state's masquerade law was intended only to criminalize disguises used as a cover for another crime, the police were forced to let this man go. But then they basically just like turned around and immediately re-arrested him and charged him with, quote, associating with idle and vicious persons.
Which
apparently was a crime. So they rearrested him, charged him with this, and then found a new magistrate to try the case again. And when he was found guilty second time and sentenced to 3 years in a reformatory, the judge made it very clear that even though he was officially charged with a real crime, which it was not a real crime.
It's not a real crime at all.
He was actually being punished for the way he dressed. According to the original article from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, the magistrate told him, quote, no girl would dress in men's clothing unless she is twisted in her moral viewpoint.
Yeah.
3 years in a reformatory for wearing men's clothing.
Hurting no one.
But so even if someone was just arrested and then let go or maybe fined, that was really all it took to have your name and the offense published in the paper.
No.
And that kind of public exposure could literally ruin someone's life.
It could end someone's
ruin opportunities.
Life.
Yeah, literally. Ruin opportunities for employment. Your family could find out. Like, so many things could go wrong just if your name showed up in the paper saying that you were, you know, being gender inappropriate. And perhaps even worse than being sent to jail, some people were even sent to psychiatric hospitals for their deviant behavior. In 1890, a San Francisco judge sent a person to the Stockton Insane Asylum for wearing men's clothing. In court, they disputed the charge, saying, quote, I'm neither a man nor a woman, and I've got no sex at all. And the judge and doctors saw this as clear evidence of insanity and locked them away in the state asylum for 18 years until they died of tuberculosis in the asylum in 1908. I think a lot of conservatives, I think that the logic and the reason people are so scared by the freedom to live your life with gender expression is that they see this as new and they don't know that people have been
I don't think they see it as new.
I think a lot of people really do. You know, they know nothing about queer history and they've never heard of this.
And maybe they've never met someone who's queer, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, you live in fucking like bumfuck North Dakota. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I'm my scandal, and I probably should just keep quiet, but my scandal is related to this and it's more contemporary. Okay. It's from the 70s. But there were people in the 70s who were holding signs that said, who are you to be different?
Yeah.
Like that, I think, is they
ridiculous.
Said it out loud, Tux. Like, who are you to be different?
Who are you to be different?
I think it's conformity. I'm
not you, bitch.
I don't think it's newness. I think it's conformity. Who are you to be different?
Yeah. Well, that definitely, yes. I'm sure that, I mean, and I know it absolutely does play a huge part in it. But I think that, like, people who have never been exposed to, especially the idea of being non-binary, just think like that's crazy talk. No, what do you know what I mean?
If they're not from like a Native American or Asian background, it can be.
Yeah.
It's new. Yeah, you're right. Because of white supremacy,
I mean, it's not, but it's
a binary on us all. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Despite the constant threat of arrest and harassment and punishment from the police, many people in the 19th century still openly refused to obey the laws.
I love it.
Lots of people.
I love it.
We're like, fuck this.
Laws are made by these
I am
toes.
Me.
Fuck it.
Yeah, I'm me to be different.
Yeah,
fuck you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like the fact that they said that, like they put these on signs. It's like, you guys are really putting like your real intent out there. I don't know if you
totally.
Like, you're supposed to just pretend this is about the children.
Right. Yeah. In San Francisco in the 1870s, Jean Bonnet appeared in court more than 20 times for violating the city's cross-dressing laws. Despite stiff fines and jail time, Bonnet didn't have any fucks left to give. She told the judge, quote, "You may send me to jail as often as you please, but you can never make me wear women's clothing again." Other people were openly challenging the validity and underlying logic of these laws. Starting around the 1860s, many feminist dress reformers fought in court for their right to wear pants.
Okay.
And to dispute the idea that pants were only for men in the first place.
Thank you.
Some judges were sympathetic at the time, especially if the defendant was like feminine and attractive. You know what I mean? If it was like girly, just happened to be wearing pants, the judge was much more likely to be like, "You're cute. You're fine. Go ahead." You know what I mean?
Oh my God. Of course they were.
But even in these cases, the charges might be dismissed for like individual offenders, but the laws were never reversed or changed or anything like that. It was just like, you had to hope that you were pretty enough and got a judge that cared that you were pretty enough to like just be released.
What year was this?
In the 1860s.
1860. Really. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So now I think this is a good time for a break. I am actually going to go make another one.
I'm going to make another one and I'm going to just fully roll my eyes out of my head because I've been holding them back this whole time.
Yeah. Your eyes are still in place.
They are.
It's unfortunate. Allow your eyes to just be different.
Yes.
All right, we'll be right back.
Welcome to Hashtag History. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And if you're a history nerd,
or even a history hater,
this is the podcast for you.
Even if history was your least favorite subject in school, we can guarantee you will like this podcast because we talk about all the things that your history textbooks did not.
Things like how the Bonnie Prince Charles and his Jacobite uprising was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, or how the pharaoh Akhenaten was so disliked by Egyptians that they literally purged his name from nearly all of their records and pretended like he had never existed.
And we do all of this while drinking and rating a custom-made cocktail specific to that week's topic.
So grab a drink, take a seat, and hang out with us each week as we learn all about history's greatest stories of controversy,
conspiracy,
and corruption.
We are back with fresh cocktails. It's been a while since we actually made a second cocktail at the break. I feel like I've been, I don't know, just trying to take it easy or something.
Same. And, yeah, but we're recording on this Memorial Day, so we can be a little freer. Yes.
Yeah, and this is real good and very easy to drink. Too easy to drink. I'm probably going to regret it later because I am having people over tonight. They're going to show up and be like, woo, because I have another cocktail to have after this when we record the next episode.
I think I've had double cocktails for the Americano because I loved
that's
that
right.
One.
Yeah, let's dive back in. So I've kind of covered the bases when it comes to the roots of these anti-cross-dressing laws and masquerade laws in the mid-19th century. But now I want to talk about how they were weaponized against queer and trans people in the 20th century. In the 1960s, there were mountains of laws, especially in New York City, that criminalized gay life. Members of the same sex were banned from dancing together in bars, and bars weren't legally allowed to serve gay people alcohol.
What?
At least that if they knew that they were gay. Yeah, they weren't allowed to serve alcohol to gay people.
That was a law?
Yes. Yeah, so this is like part of why the Stonewall Inn was run by the mob, because they ran it as like a private social club that you had to belong to, and you had to pay to be a member to be able to go in there. And so, you know, it was run by the mob. So they really took advantage of the people that went there. They like, you know, if they found out anyone had money, they sort of like extorted people.
Of course,
and
yeah.
They also watered down the drinks. It was not a great place to go, but it was one of the few places, I'll get into this in a bit, but it was one of the few places where like drag queens could go and trans people could go and sort of just be themselves. Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, you had to like belong as a member to the Stonewall so that you could drink alcohol. The NYPD regularly targeted queer spaces, leading to the routine harassment and arrest of butch lesbians, trans women, and gay men in drag for violating cross-dressing laws. First-hand accounts of these raids describe the police enforcing a rule that required people to wear 3 articles of gender-appropriate clothing or face arrest. Rusty Brown first started dressing as a man as a disguise to get a factory job after she lost her position as a machinist at the end of World War II. But she later started working as a drag queen or a drag king, excuse me.
Okay.
She later started working as a drag king in New York's gay bars, which was when her troubles really began. She said, quote, "I have been arrested in New York more times than I have fingers and toes for wearing pants in a shirt." At that time, she said, "You had to have 3 pieces of female attire to avoid being arrested for cross-dressing." In queer circles around the country, this rule became known as the 3-article rule. It was referenced everywhere, including reports about arrests in Greenwich Village in the months leading up to the Stonewall Rebellion in the summer of 1969.
Wow.
Violations of the 3-article rule were one of the most common reasons for the arrest of queer people in the 20th century. But as it turns out, no such rule ever actually existed.
No.
At least not on the books. There was no 3-article rule on the books.
So someone just made it up and like,
I mean, the cops just decided that it was going to be easier to like control queer populations if they thought that this was a real rule.
But if they had 3 items, like would they let them go?
I think sometimes, yeah. Or like they would maybe beat them up, but not arrest them.
Oh, okay.
So researchers say that while this rule always comes up in interviews and memoirs about queer life in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, the 3-article rule never once appeared in any official documents actually produced in those years. And even cities that still had official anti-cross-dressing laws on the books never had any legitimate rules about specific numbers of articles of gendered clothing.
Wow.
Not even police procedural manuals from that time mention 3-article rules. They've looked and looked and looked and can't find it. Which basically means, yeah, that this rule never really existed in a legal sense, but that didn't stop the cops from, you know, cops across the country. It wasn't just in New York.
Wow.
This was happening everywhere. So this ridiculous rule that never actually existed.
That's wild.
Was actually one of the, I know, it's, I mean, like literally, this is like one of the biggest tools in policing.
Like, were there no like lawyers representing gay people to be like, oh, okay, what law did my client violate?
I mean, I'm sure that the cops would be able to find something to say, like, if gay men were not allowed to dance together, if gay men were not allowed to
drink alcohol,
or queer people in general. Exactly. Right. And they didn't need to come up with this fake rule, but you know, this was specifically really targeted at drag queens and trans people and butch lesbians who dress like men.
Yeah. Gender nonconforming.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, again, whether or not they had a lawyer, they could find something.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard. And the judges were not on their side. The lawyers were not on their side.
They
you know,
weren't allowed to drink alcohol. Like, they actually made that a rule. Like, y'all suck. Like, what?
I mean, I think the point was like gay bars were illegal. Gay, you know.
But, oh, so, like, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That.
I mean, it wasn't like if you went to a bar and ordered a drink and the bartender didn't know you were gay,
yeah,
that the bartender was going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But like, you weren't allowed to
gay
like,
establishments.
Have a queer space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. That is a thing. Yes.
Yeah. But so this rule was one of the contributing factors that led to the uprising at the Stonewall Inn. Since police used this three article rule as an excuse to raid gay bars and harass and arrest patrons, a lot of gay bars wouldn't let drag queens or trans people in. They were trying really hard, especially white gay men, were trying really hard to just be like, we're straight-laced, we're normal, we just, you know.
We're not like you.
We're just doing... Yeah, exactly. We're just doing butt stuff behind closed doors, but we're not like you. We're not a weirdo like you, you know.
We're not being ourselves openly.
Exactly.
Like you.
Yeah.
Being different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, which of course comes from a place of fear more than hate, but it was not, it's not a cute look.
Yeah, the fear can become hate because this is America.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it, that's
exactly.
That's
and
the,
I mean, we're still dealing with that. We're still dealing with this today, like organizations like the Human Rights Campaign basically trampling all over trans rights in you know, to get gay rights passed further.
Yeah.
That was not a very eloquent way of saying that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is still happening today. But anyways,
this was all very recent. Of course, it's still happening today.
Yeah, exactly. But because the Stonewall Inn was run by the mob and they paid the cops off to let them keep operating, the Stonewall became a hangout for drag queens and for trans people because they weren't welcome in other gay bars. And the mob didn't give a fucking shit. They were just like, as long as you're paying us, we don't care what
they
the
know how to mind their fucking business.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, provided they got money.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, when it comes to the story of the uprising at the Stonewall Inn, we have this legend of this drag queen, Marsha P. Johnson, throwing the first brick that started the whole rebellion in the first place. The reality is that it was much more likely to have been like a bottle or something that was just like on the table than a brick. Nobody like ran out of the bar to go find a brick and then came back in and threw it, you know.
Unless they had a brick in their bag
and
for protection.
It's possible. It's really unlikely that it was that it was really a brick. It's also kind of unlikely that it was actually Marsha P. Johnson. She was probably there. Mm-hmm. But no one really knows for sure who threw the first projectile or whatever it may have been. But we do know for sure that the entire reason that the cops raided the bar in the first place was to harass drag queens thanks to the three article rule.
Wow.
And so after Stonewall, after the uprising, the fight for gay rights became much more visible. And a lot of police forces across the country sort of became a little bit hesitant to focus as much anyways on cross-dressing arrests. Of course, that didn't mean that they just stopped harassing queer people and trans people, but they were a lot more careful about how and when they did it and what laws they used to justify their actions. And the 70s also saw a lot of legal battles challenging the validity of these laws, and a lot of cities were forced to overturn the actual cross-dressing bans that were big in cities in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Were overturned, a lot of them. And eventually, over the years, the police kind of just forgot about the three article rule because it didn't exist in the first place. But even though the NYPD stopped enforcing the masquerade law in New York, New York State never actually repealed it. In fact, in 2011, the NYPD resurrected the masquerade law to arrest Occupy Wall Street protesters for wearing masks in public.
Wow.
So as much as I wish that this were the end of the story, as much as I wish that this were ancient queer history, here we are today.
Yeah.
After all the hard-fought battles of the past 40 or 50 years, after all the arrests, after all the harassment and all the beatings and all the deaths at the hands of the police, all the sacrifices and all the legal battles to get these laws overturned and improve the lives of queer people in this country who literally just want to live their lives the way they want to live them on their own terms. But no, we can't have that.
No.
Here we are today, and these anti-cross-dressing laws are making a comeback in a big way. And there are a lot of similarities between the old laws and the new ones. They're both based on the public visibility of gender nonconformity and people's fear or hatred of that visibility. Mm-hmm. And both of these laws look at drag as a form of indecency. They also share a reliance on vague language that makes them flexible tools for policing. If they were not so vague, the police wouldn't be able to bend them however they wanted. But thankfully, that vague language should also, hopefully at least, make them vulnerable to legal challenges. Unfortunately, one of the biggest differences is that rather than being based on criminalizing disguises or different forms of dress, a lot of these new drag bans classify drag performances as sexually explicit. And there are at least 15 states right now that are pushing drag bans across the country. And because these are often classified as sexual-based crimes, they come with extremely harsh sentences. A bill that just passed in Arizona's state senate says that if a drag queen performs in front of anyone under 15 years old, they could go to prison for at least 10 years and have to register as a sex offender for performing in drag in front of someone 14-year-old.
Is it wrong that, like, when you said Arizona, I, like, breathe a sigh of relief that it wasn't Ohio.
That it's not Ohio. I'm sure Ohio's.
Yeah.
If Ohio isn't doing it already,
it's on the list to try to do it, I'm sure. Yeah.
And parents or anyone who allows a minor to watch a drag show would also be subject to punishment under this law in Arizona. Thankfully, Arizona's governor is expected to veto this bill, but there are plenty of other similar bills being pushed across the country, and most of them are happening in states that have far less sympathetic governors who are not going to veto these bills. The law in Tennessee is especially scary.
Yeah.
Critics say that the bill is so constitutionally vague that no one is exactly certain what falls under the jurisdiction of this ban, making drag performers and business owners really uncertain about what's going to happen next. And some fear that if children were to show up to pride events in Tennessee, that the police could just show up and start arresting drag queens or anyone dressed in a costume that the police don't like. Anyone that is different could be arrested. Even parents could be arrested for bringing children to pride parades under this law.
That's really disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just because the law is written in such a vague way. So no one's really sure if this would happen or not, or if the police would really do it or not. But that fear of not knowing and needing to sort of find out is terrifying.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point.
Totally.
The ACLU of Tennessee tweeted, quote, "We are concerned that government officials could easily abuse this law to censor people based on their own subjective viewpoints of what they deem appropriate, chilling protected free speech and sending a message to LGBTQ Tennesseans that they are not welcome in our state."
Don't we have other shit to worry about? Come on.
Look around you. Look at what is happening in this world. God. And this is what you're choosing to be focused on. It's always about bullies have to pick on the easiest target first.
Absolutely.
You start with the smallest, weakest people that nobody cares about. Drag queen, if they went after all gay people, like the entire gay population first, it wouldn't work. You have to pick off the easiest targets first. Yeah. And then we'll be next. If this, you know, if they succeed, we're going to be next. But you can't start with an entire, like, you know, if everybody's got some like gay uncle or something that just, you know, fits in and does what they're going to do, you can't go after those people first. That's not where you start, but that's where you'll get eventually. But yeah, these laws were written with this really vague language on purpose to make them easy to bend to the will of the people passing and enforcing them. And that fear of not knowing if or when or how harshly they're going to be enforced is also part of the point. They want to drive queer people and trans people out of the public eye completely. They want to make pride events scary.
Yeah.
And this is a great way to do that. They want people to be afraid. And thanks to similar drag bans that are going on in Florida, multiple cities in Florida have already started canceling pride events.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so disheartening to see. I mean, people are fighting back. I mean, people have always fought back. But it's
absolutely,
like,
absolutely.
This is like,
I mean, look at what was happening in the 1860s.
Yeah.
We're going to fight back. Yeah. You're not going to get away with it, but not long term, but you're going to do some real fucking damage and ruin some lives in the meantime.
Yeah.
Between these drag bans and all the laws being passed against trans rights and trans, you know, rights to gender affirming healthcare, yeah. Like there's
rights
so
to
much
just
happening.
Like go to the bathroom as a child.
I mean,
what the fuck? Like we're looking in the pants of children. Like this is what we're
ridiculous.
Doing.
Ridiculous. We're tracking periods and shit. Like what are you
this
talking
isn't
about?
Like the creepiest shit you've ever heard of in your life. This isn't Orwellian at all.
Yeah, you can look like some old man can look in a little girl's underwear to make sure they don't have a penis, but that's not the problem.
No.
The problem is a fucking drag queen dressed up as Snow White reading a book.
So I
in a library.
Oh my God. This has nothing to do with nothing. Well, actually it has a little bit to do with gender affirming care. My scandal, the scandal that you all will hear in 2 weeks, also has to do with you know, it's in honor of Pride Month. I found out I think it's 1973. This is something I took out of my outline. 1973 was when Sweden made it legal for gender non-conforming people to change their gender, like on their ID. And
legally.
This is
1973.
And they made it so the state paid for gender reassignment surgery, life-affirming gender reassignment surgery in 1973. I think let me look this up, but I think it's
that hurts me.
Right.
Meanwhile, over here, it really feels like we're sliding backwards in a very real and very fucking scary way right now.
Oh, okay. It was 1979, Sweden.
Still, yeah. 1979.
The first country unfucking
believable. Right? Oh my God.
Yeah. And to pay for the surgery for free.
That's
like they want their citizens to live long, healthy lives. Imagine.
Oh, we don't want that here.
I know.
If we wanted that here, we would have healthcare.
Yeah, we don't.
Come on.
Yeah.
We don't. I mean, we're not going to pay for gender affirming care. We're not even going to pay for people who have cancer to stay alive.
Yeah.
Like what? No, we don't want that here. We want cogs in the machine to shut up and do their job and die quietly.
But I think, I mean, people are aware, are becoming more aware, and that's why they're afraid. This is why they are going after this really small minority of people because everyone else is too strong. They think that we're going to abandon these people, and we're not.
I mean, we have historically.
Yeah.
The gay, especially white gay men have been very quick to abandon anyone that
I mean, like white women being like, noise. Feminism, what?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
White supremacy all day.
Yeah. Trans exclusionary radical feminists.
Oh
what?
Yeah.
Anyways, I do need to, I have a little bit left.
Oh, do
to
you?
Say
oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's okay. No, I'm nearly done. But yeah, I do. I just want to say that like, it's especially scary because the success that these bills are currently having and like the number of bills that are, that are being pushed forward in a number, like 15 states in this country right now, the success of these bills is emboldening a very small, but extremely vocal minority of extremists. Making them feel really comfortable to like go and fucking throw a temper tantrum in Target because they saw a pride display or.
Okay. Can we talk about that video?
Oh my God.
And how sassily he was walking.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Sir, just try dick. It's all right. Like, It's delicious.
Like, nobody's... Everybody loves a little butt stuff.
Come
it's
on.
Fine.
Like, you don't have to walk around like this. Like...
Breaking, like, oh my God, a rainbow, throw it in the garbage. Jesus Christ. But we've all, you know, it's not just that. It's not the pride displays at Target. Who gives a shit about Target?
Yeah, fuck Target.
We've got literal Nazis marching in the street outside of drag shows.
Yes.
We've got the Proud Boys talking online about escalating attacks on pride events across the country this year, this June, this month.
This month.
And the Proud Boys are talking openly online on their fucking weird subreddits and all this bullshit about how they're going to start attacking gay-owned businesses.
Oh my God.
And they're, yes. And they're reclaiming the month of June as Proud Month.
Yes. Tuck sent me this link last night and it exploded my brain. It's just, it's
going to be in the show notes.
It's so incredibly despicable what they're doing. And this is why they have to hide their face. Yeah, totally.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, but where's the masquerade laws?
Like, oh, I know. Seriously, where are these masquerade laws for the fucking Klan?
Yeah. Seriously.
Where were they?
I mean, because the cops were there.
The cops were the Klan.
But yeah. As somebody who appreciates queer history and knows, I mean, a little bit of queer history, I know full well that things have been worse before. I know how bad things have been before. I know how far we've come. But that doesn't change the fact that it is a fucking terrifying time to be gay in this country right now.
It does.
I am scared fucking shitless.
Yeah.
But the good news is we've been through this before.
Totally.
We've dealt with this shit already. And we've already won.
Yeah.
We've already, like, and this time we have the benefit of being able to look back at history and understand how gender nonconformity was policed in the past and how we were able to overturn similar laws before.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fucking power in that.
Totally. And that's how I feel.
I mean, it's still scary, but
I mean,
God damn.
To exist in the US is to be scared, which is sad. Not all the time, but like when you really think about how dangerous this place is. For gay people, for people of color, like historically, how we are not protected really. You know, when shit hits the fan, it is terrifying, but at the same time, like, this is nothing new. And we're still here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not getting rid of us.
Yeah. Exactly. I was a little bit hesitant to do the story. I was afraid that it wasn't really a big enough scandal, and it wasn't a scandalous enough story.
Yeah.
But like, the fact that this fucking three article rule didn't
even
actually
exist. Yeah, that's there.
And it was such a huge part of policing queer people
so
in the
wrong
20th century.
For that. I mean, the diabolical, truly.
You had so many laws to choose from that were targeted towards queer people, and you had to make one up. But yeah, I also kind of just wanted to give some historical context about just how scary and dangerous these current drag bans are for people who might not really understand that, like, it isn't just about protecting the children from sexually explicit drag shows. It has nothing to do with that. That's the talking point, but it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, before I wrap things up, before I wrap this episode up, I just want to say, I mean, I did at the beginning of the episode say, y'all need to go to a protest. You need to especially if you live.
You
in a
need
state
to go to a protest, and you need to go to a pride parade.
That's what I was. That's
the
point
I'm sorry.
I was just gonna make.
I'm sorry. Well,
go to pride. Don't be sorry.
Yeah.
We should both be shouting this from the rooftops. Go to pride. Don't let these assholes ruin it. I know it's scary.
Yeah.
I have second thoughts about going myself. But I'm fucking gonna go because it's important, especially right now.
Totally.
Especially when they're trying so hard to make it scary. This is when you have to go.
Yeah, and it's not just these for queer people. Everyone needs to go.
Exactly. Exactly. Bring the kids.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's they want people to be afraid. They want people to not go. They want to silence queer voices and extinguish queer joy. Don't let them.
Yeah, they're not gonna. That was really
good.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot of overlap with my story, but but it's good.
Sorry.
No, it's good.
I set the scene.
Yeah,
the scene
totally. You gave me a foundation. It was really, it's really important because we're back here again. And like you said, we know how to fight it. It doesn't make it less demoralizing, but we know what we have to do. Yeah. And if we could do it once, we can do it again. I keep thinking karma is going to come to these hoes. I keep thinking.
I mean, I'm just waiting for all their dicks to fall off.
So I, funny that you mentioned that, because yesterday I was thinking, when you sent me that Proud Month shit, my mind instantly went to dick scurvy. Do you remember when I looked up what scurvy was and we like felt a little bad because like their limbs disintegrate? But like, no, I want dick scurvy for all of them. All of them.
You know what we need to do? We need to make the Proud Boys think that citrus is gay.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. They all get scurvy.
You heard it here first, y'all. Citrus is gay.
The gayest. I saw
it's woke.
I saw two lemons giving jerking each other off.
Citrus is part of the woke agenda.
Oh my god. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about you, but my drink is basically empty.
I have a swig left, yeah. But I can make it disappear. Magician. I have one of those straws, those like reed straws.
Oh.
And it's been in this drink this whole time, and it's just now finally starting to get soggy.
Incredible. We've come a long way since those paper monstrosities. Our first episode, we had paper straws that weren't even garbage. Able to get through the first like 30 minutes without it turning to mush.
Literally
turned to mush. They were beautiful though.
I love these like straw. They're called for those of
hay,
you
right? who might be
yeah they're called hay straws. Yeah, like H-A-Y exclamation point.
Yeah,
and I love them.
Hey,
they're a little small.
That's how I hear
they're they're gay straws. Yeah, straws are gay now too.
Yeah,
by the way. But yeah, my drink's now empty.
Cool.
So, now it's time to start eating this fruit.
Yeah, so America's history is juicy. We just add brandy, a shit ton of ice, and some simple syrup and fruit. Call it a day.
Make it fruity
in honor of Pride Month. Make it real fruity, y'all. Mm-hmm. Remember, lemons are the gayest of the gay. you heard it here first. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lurzel.
Thank you.
Hey
yes. Thank you to our editor, our new editor, Thomas. He's amazing. We could not do this without him. Thank you. Thank you.
Facts are facts, America. Yeah. All right. That's it. Bye.
Bye, y'all. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. And make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.